Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha and welcome to Talking Pictures with Paul Booth. Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it. And I want to send a thank you out to the listeners of episodes 1, 2, and 3. We've been doing great numbers. And since this show is for movie lovers and not just for me or the guests and for the listeners, that makes me really happy. I want to start out with, as always, I have to thank my friend Alexa Foreman, formerly of Turner Classic Movies, who gave us this great title, Talking Pictures. Also, so you guys have a reference point for me as a host, I'm a film journalist, I'm an independent film producer with a few things on Netflix. And if you want to read some of my stuff, you can go to Influx Magazine online, which is www.influxmagazine.com. Again, that's www.influxmagazine.com. I really prefer not talking about myself, but I want to give you guys a reference point for who your host is. Also, I want to give you guys recommendations each week, since I now realize that we have people who only watch movies on Netflix, people who still love to go to the theater, and then people who love the classic movie channel or the library. So I want to throw some films out there for you in all three categories so you have something to check out, maybe discover or revisit it. The first one for Netflix is Alexander Payne's Nebraska. It garnered multiple Oscar nominations. This is a film that I have heard people be very mixed about, but if you check it out and you don't like it, just pay attention to the masterful cinematography that did garner Fade and Papa Michael an Oscar nomination. Fade and Papa Michael has, of course, shot great films like The Descendants, Moonlight Mile, Walk the Line, the Johnny Cash biopic. For those of you that still like to go to the theater, there's been great stuff out, St. Vincent, and I saw Dumb and Dumber 2 last night. That was a riot. You really don't need to see the first one. So definitely check out Dumb and Dumber 2. Very much worth the call. Just checking on McKenna, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, excellent. Our guest that will be joining us today is McKenna Ballard, and she's going to be talking about a film. My last recommendation for you guys that you can, it'll be a little bit harder to find at the library, but you can check it out on Turner Classic Movies this Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 Pacific, and that is Duel. And the importance of Duel is it's Steven Spielberg's first movie. No, Jaws was not his first movie. Sugarland Express with Goldie Hawn was not his first movie. Duel is just basically about a truck chasing a car down the road, and it's very interesting because not a whole lot of plot, there's not characters, but it really showed that Spielberg was here and had a voice and had an understanding of cutting. So check out Duel on Turner Classic Movies, or really try to find it at your libraries so you can have a reference point. Today's guest, McKenna Ballard, is, first of all, I want to make sure that I pronounced that right.
Yes, you did.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because the last thing I want to do is be pronouncing a guest's name wrong. McKenna is joining us today to talk about a film that is currently on festival circuits and will be coming to, it's called A Little Game. Again, that's A Little Game. And it's coming to theaters in New York City, December 12th. There's also in January, I'm told it's going to hit Netflix, Video On Demand, and Walmart, so you can check that out. The main reason I brought her on today was because, first, before I get into the synopsis, I'll start with the synopsis. Plays Max, and Max is a little girl who's ostracized at her posh new uptown school, and shaken by the death of her beloved grandmother, She's the 10-year-old downtown girl finds an unlikely mentor in the form of a chess master who uses the game to teach her lessons in resilience, perseverance, and how to embrace inevitable change. What I want to tell you guys, on the surface, that sounds like your run-of-the-mill family film. It could easily, which it doesn't, fall into cliches, but as I mentioned, grandmother and chess master, it's the great Oscar winner. It's the great Oscar winners, Olympia Dukakis, as well as F. Murray Abraham. I apologize to all of you guys. No one ever calls me when I'm on air, and for some reason someone's calling me. Sorry about that. Olympia Dukakis and F. Murray Abraham are the grandmother and the chess master. So now we're here today with a child actress who is older than she was when she made the film, and she kind of is able to carry her own weight and work with these, to someone my age, they're legends. They are a big part of film history. And so my first question was for McKenna before we dive into all the hype stuff around Oscars, because it is hype, and as you've learned from working with them, people are just people. What drew you to this character, Max, or what was something that you found interesting about her as an artist?
I think what I found interesting about Max is I loved her confidence, and I also think some of the things she struggled with I could really relate to. And she was a really cool character, and I really was excited about playing her because she was relatable and she was fun and she had all of these qualities that I was really excited to be able to portray. And the film as a whole, it just has a really great message, and I was really blessed to be able to work in this film. I was really drawn to the message of, I really loved working in this film. I really did. And, yeah.
Well, I mean, because there's a, the thing that I liked the most was that, of course, as I had said, this was at the International Family Film Festival that I saw it here in Los Angeles, at Raleigh Studios, and there's so many times where it could have been sappy or overplayed to the emotion. So was there a time that you were, I don't know, conscious to not be, I don't want to say baby-like, but too childlike, or, to, you know, like you said, you liked the confidence, to kind of stand in the confidence and not go down the road of, or was that something that the director was able to help you more with?
You know, it was never really discussed. It wasn't, I never was consciously trying not to make it seem too sappy or anything. For me, it was more about just accurately portraying Max and who she is and what is happening in her life. I didn't really think of it, while I was in it, I didn't think of it as I was making a movie. It was more about, for me, I was becoming Max every day, and I was living her life, and I was discovering who she is and the layers to her. Because, you know, people have layers, and so do characters, and I think as an actor, going in every day, and really, it was more about just trying to learn new things about Max and really become her and how she would react in everyday situations, rather than, oh, as a movie, is this going to seem too sappy in this moment or too harsh in this moment? It was more about what would Max do, sort of thing.
I see. Well, it's interesting that you're talking about layers, because that's something that, you know, people don't understand or even think about till they're in their 20s, sometimes even 30s. So I was really impressed by the fact that you know, had this control of the character that obviously wasn't, and no offense to it, to child actor actresses who get their lines read, but This didn't seem like you had someone telling you what to say off camera, or that you had to do, you know, 25 takes because you kept forgetting your lines. So there was, I keep going back to that word confidence. Do you think there's a way that you could articulate how you were so able to bring a confidence to, just playing scenes with F. Murray Abraham? I mean, someone who's been doing it probably 4 or 5 times longer than you've been alive. Like, what was that just something you weren't conscious of, or did you have to kind of just stick to I'm Max, and so it doesn't matter if it's who's across the table from me?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because, you know, when you think about, oh, I'm going to work with an Academy Award-winning actor, you immediately, like, go over your script a bunch and get a little nervous and sit up straighter sort of thing. But really, when I got there, F. Murray Abraham was so fun and friendly and really sweet with me. And he just made it a really comfortable environment where I could be myself and we could talk. And so when I went to play Max, it made it all that much easier because it was a really comfortable environment and he was really great to work with.
I see, yeah, because he's, you know, to my generation, he's, you know, there's so many films that I can guarantee you haven't seen because your age that are just amazing works of art, not just the film, but his craft. And it was kind of interesting for me to, I jumped at the film because I'm such a fan of his, when I was asked to take a look at what I wanted to review. And then I found myself kind of not paying attention to him and paying attention to your performance. And that's something that only actresses like, you know, Anna Paquin and Dakota Fanning and, you know, Shirley Temple. But to me, that's so, you know, that's just part of our American culture that it's, you know, there's not some great Shirley Temple performance where you're like, oh my gosh, she just blew me away. And she, you know, it's like what was great was that nothing was relied on, oh, here's just cutesy McKenna. And I really respected that, like you said, F. Murray Abraham made it comfortable. So you guys, you know, had this rapport and were able to kind of go through things. So do you have a specific favorite scene or story that involves F. Murray Abraham?
Yes, yes. So I don't know if you remember, but the scene where he picks up the rook and goes, this is a rook, otherwise known as a castle. Well, I forget which day it was, but we were all kind of tired. And we were filming the scene, and he picks up the rook and goes, this is a booger. And I start laughing just hysterically, and I ruined, like, 3 takes because I just couldn't pull it together. It was really, really hysterical.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
no, I remember that very vividly. I mean, that was a great, I mean, to go into metaphors and to not, you know, I kept going back to how is this girl explaining metaphors to me when some people that age wouldn't even know what a metaphor was, let alone how to portray it and not have me kind of have to guess with it or use my adult brain. So that's kind of like, I heard you got to spend a number of days kind of getting kind of like a master's class with him, like it was just you guys working. What was that like?
Yeah, it was the Washington Square Park scenes, and it was just us doing our scenes, and it was really amazing to be on the receiving end and working with such an incredible actor. Because, I mean, when you see it, you know, watching a movie, you see how he becomes his character, but when you're right there working with him, I had never seen someone so immersed in who they were playing, and he wouldn't do each take the same. Like, on every take, he'd try something different, whether it would be changing the inflection in his voice or just a different action, but it was all within the realm of who Norman was.
Right.
And he really whether he knew it or not, he taught me what acting really is. And that isn't just, you know, reading. You know, when we see a line or a script, there's certain emotions in the line, like anger, sadness, and it's right there. But what he really taught me is you have to go beyond that, and you have to go under and really piece apart the layers of emotion that are beneath each word your character is saying. And
right.
That's what it really means to be an actor, is not only to express the emotion that is directly in the line, but the things that are hiding behind it. And he taught me that. And so I'll always remember working with him. It was an incredible, incredible experience.
Well, did you have a, you know, you get to, as a young girl, and of course this is all about your process, I'm just giving the names so that people have a reference point before we get into Mr. Ralph Macchio on a, on a female woman to woman level. How was it to be with Olympia Dukakis, and you have to pull off the, like, I believed that she was your grandmother. I'm a filmmaker, so I know it can be scripted and you can have to be, say, grandma, but I really believed that connection. So was there something specific that you guys did or worked out or had to work on to, you know, really, really sell that?
I was going to bring this up, and I'm glad you mentioned it. It literally just, I don't know, she's so wonderful at just her craft that it made it that much easier for me to be Max, because she was so incredible at being Yaya, that when we did the scene together, it didn't feel like it was me and Olympia Dukakis reading lines and doing a scene. It really felt like she was my grandmother, and I'm really glad that came through on the screen, because I don't know why, but it just really felt that way, and I think because she's so incredible, it helped me in turn become Max, and we were able to really work with each other, and it created something magical, I think.
Did you have a secret trick, like, say you didn't, you went out of your way to not see any of their films, or did you see their films with Dukakis and Abraham?
I didn't watch their films on purpose before I went in, because I didn't want to have any preconceived notions about, you know, I just didn't want to go in seeing them as that character in the film, you know? I just wanted to go in blank slate, like, just coming in and working with them, not seeing any other characters that they may have played before. I just wanted to see them and meet them and then work with them as them playing the character in this movie, you know, not having anything else in the back of my mind, you know?
I know, that's excellent. I mean, that's such a tool, that's something actors much older than you get. Because we have such a great cast here, and you kind of maybe weren't billed as heading it or leading it, but as you watch the film, for those, again, December 12th, New York City in theaters, and coming to Netflix, Video On Demand, Walmart in January, I wasn't given the specific dates, but keep an eye out for that. Again, we're talking about A Little Game. This is not a movie where you're going to, with all due respect, jump towards our guest today. But we also had Janine Garofalo, who's, you know, to my generation is just huge because of Reality Bites. But do you have, you know, what was that like to work with Ralph Macchio in this generation? Because my generation is so stuck with him being the Karate Kid. So I've always wondered what it's like outside of that realm and his craft outside of just being, you know, the way he's pigeonholed to that character, respectfully. It's just, it's audience. It's not anyone else's.
I really loved working with Ralph Macchio. He was so sweet and so nice. And, you know, we talked in between takes. And so when it came to the scenes where he played my dad, it made it so much easier and more real to me, I think. And also, I worked with him very early on in the process because, as you might know, movies are all filmed out of order as far as the scenes.
Right,
so you could
right.
film, like, the last scene in the movie 3 weeks before you wrap kind of thing. But I worked with him very early on before I'd really, like, because I think I hit a point where I was really comfortable with everyone and everything and being on set all day. And but this was still, like, maybe second, third day into the process. And before each take, I would see him kind of get quiet, and really I could see that he was getting into the space that he needed to portray this character. And I thought, that's really smart. And so I kind of wanted to adopt that in a way so that I could have something before each take to really feel like I was getting in the mind space to be Max for that little bit. And it was, I loved working with him, and he just made me feel really comfortable, and it was a great, I had a great time. It was really fantastic.
Well, and those of you that, for those of you that don't know, listeners, because part of the point of this show is to also not educate like we know more, but to let, you know, shine a light for the audience. I've crewed some big studio projects, and it is no walk in the park. It is 13 to 16 hour days, longer if you include getting up and then the time it takes you to go to sleep at night. So this is very, it's very, very grueling, unless you're Al Pacino, and no disrespect to Al Pacino, and you can just basically hang out in your trailer until the moment it's your time. It's, and not that he hasn't paid his dues, again, no disrespect to Al Pacino, but for a film shoot, for those of you that don't know, it's not just a 9-to-5 job. It can frequently involve, like you said, you have to portray the ending in the beginning. You might have to portray the hardest scene on your second day of work, or, and it can be a real, especially for actors, because crew. We just do whatever we're told for the day. So we don't really have to, you know, set the cables for 2 months from now today. So I'm really glad that you had mentioned that about the mention the time of days, because it's, the process is just, couldn't be different for actors. I think we all enjoy the craft services part of the workday, because that's the time where we get food that we usually don't get and can have a nice time to kind of bond as crew. Was this Washington Square Park? I like that you brought that up before I go into my question that involves Evan. Washington Square Park, I've been to, and so it's like, you know, what a great place to be working and to have your work day be. I mean, was that, was there a little bit of that kind of like, you know, my work is in this beautiful park in Manhattan? Like,
yeah, I think it made it really authentic to actually be in Washington Square Park. We did encounter a lot of noise because there were literally, like, right next to where we were filming, there was a construction site.
Oh, okay.
But I think it was really cool that we had the authenticity of actually being in Washington Square Park to film those scenes.
So basically, since you mentioned noise, this leads in perfectly to my next question, where you mentioned noise, which means you probably learned a lot about production assistants and ADs who try to keep things quiet or keep people from walking in the frame or gawking at the, because they see Ralph Macchio or F. Murray Abraham. So what was this kind of experience like for you, where you kind of got to do a film 101 class of kind of learning the whole process, even through the edit bay? I would love to hear your take on that.
Well, first of all, I had the best director in the world, Evan Oppenheimer. And he, before we even started filming, he invited us over to have dinner at his house. And, you know, we talked, and I was comfortable, you know, before I actually had to go shoot and be on set. And that was really nice. And he, beforehand, he explained, like, kind of what the whole process was going to be, making a movie. And so when I came on set, I kind of knew a little more, and he always explained everything as we went along and made it a great environment for me to ask questions and just really what making a movie was. He really showed me that. And then after we were done with production, he invited me to the editing suite to see a few scenes being edited, and I got to meet the editor, and kudos to all editors, because I could never do that job, because I am very indecisive, and that is the whole job. You watch takes all day, and you're making decisions as to which transition would look best here, or what would be the best scene for here, and I could never do that because I'm so indecisive, but I really enjoyed seeing the process, and, you know, I got to see footage of before it was a full movie. He allowed us to see footage of the film. That was really great.
Well, plus those of you that don't know, sound and film are recorded and filmed separately, so not only is editing as strenuous and as interesting as McKenna is explaining it, is that you might have a shot of McKenna and you're using the sound of F. Murray Abraham because maybe the shot of him didn't work, or vice versa. And so the sound gets moved around, and I just know that from not only being on sets, but from film school, I sound edited multiple projects, and I think if people really were to learn about it, you can, I don't want to spoil the illusion of film and television, but there's so many times where the sound from one take is thrown over another take. So is that kind of like a breaking of the illusion for you, like, hey, wait a minute, that line worked for me, and it, but it's on his face. Like, how was that for you?
Well, I had to afterwards, because I mentioned the noise, I had to go back and do ADR, just recording of me saying some of my lines so they could splice it over the actual take, just to get a little reprieve from some of the background noise. And I don't know, it didn't really spoil the illusion for me. It was more just, you know, that's one of the facts of filming a movie, is the sound is a whole factor. Just like the film is a factor, and the type of texture you use for the camera, and there's so many factors that go into making a movie, and sound is one of them. And that's what was so great about Evan Oppenheimer, is he really showed me each of these little facets that go into making a successful movie, and he kind of walked me through each one, and it was really great.
Well, you're lucky that you got to do ADR, not only for the experience, but just to see what goes into it and to have more of an appreciation. And if I didn't say before, I might have, but as we've had this discussion, I want the listeners to know, this was her first film. So this wasn't like, you know, four roles as the girl that's the niece who sits at the table, or she had one line in three different movies. This is her first time out, and that's why I kind of talked up and wanted to mention some of these things more, because I see here, as I'm looking at your resume, you've done off-Broadway, you've done regional theater, where I see you played Matilda in Matilda, so that with the Royal Shakespeare Company.
I wanted to say that was a dialect session. Yeah, it was just, they auditioned some kids, and I was selected to be a part of learning the British dialect for the show, so I wasn't in the
Oh, right,
I
see that here, invited dialect section, sorry about that. Thank you for letting me know about that, but I see here industrial, dance, training, musician. So that leads me up to the big question of, do you have, with all this, I mean, these talents that, I'm not sounding arrogant here, but I'm I'm 35, and I don't think I could dance, do off-Broadway, do film, and do music. So this is a really amazing thing to be doing at your age. Do you have an ideal project, or if you had, like, a dream project to do, what would it be?
I would love to work on a movie that combines kind of everything I love, which is music, I'm a classical pianist, and cultures and languages. So I'd love to do something that was maybe set in a different country, had a few lines and a different language, and I could do some music and a really deep character, because I love characters that I can sink my teeth into and that have many different sides to them that I can kind of explore.
That's interesting. So music, do you mean just a great soundtrack, or do you mean a musical, or how would that, how would you see that?
Maybe a movie where I could play piano, because I'm a classical musician, and I play piano for 3 hours every day. I'm training to audition for the Van Cleburne Jr. competition that's coming up. It's an international piano competition, so I'd love to do a film where I got to play piano.
Interesting. Yeah, because the piano, just a sidebar, I guess it was like a month ago, I saw Elton John play the Staples Center here in Los Angeles, and I was fortunate enough to have seats just one section, I think I was 25 feet from him above the stage, but I happened to be looking right over his hands. And it was just the most amazing experience to watch what his hands do. Just the speed, the tempo, to me, he's the master at the piano, that's still living. So as a piano player, I just wanted to say that you know what goes into it, and you know that it's all about the tempo and setting the tempo. So to see someone of his level and to just be able to, I watched his hands more than I watched the show. It was that intriguing. Do you have anything else coming up in the works that you'd like to give a plug to or mention, just so people can kind of keep you and your work on their radar?
Well, I'm in the final round of callbacks for a new Broadway production that'll be coming up. I've been auditioning, and I'm hoping something will come up soon, but I am in the final callbacks for the new Broadway show, so I'm excited. I'm hoping.
Well, you've been getting such good reviews, and of course winning the award for Best Child Actor at this festival, the International Family Film Festival, for those that don't know, it's in its 19th year. It's eighth year at Raleigh Studios, which is right across the street from Paramount Pictures here in Hollywood. So it was a really great thing for you to pick up those awards. Have you picked up any other awards, or has this been playing any other festivals?
This was my first award, but this was in the Newport Beach Film Festival, and it was in a couple other film festivals as well.
Oh, so it already played the Newport Beach Film Festival?
Yes.
Oh, okay, because I only mentioned that because this is going to be in 2015 will be my fifth year covering it. So that's a really big, for you audience members, sorry, just to give a quick plug to the Newport Beach Film Festival. That is a superb film festival. They have everything you could think of, and I always say that their worst film is great. So the fact that you were in the Newport, your film was in the Newport Beach Film Festival, let alone this last year was their 15th anniversary, that in itself is not only an award, but is above an award. So I'm sure they didn't tell you that because they're very humble people and wouldn't be saying how grandiose they are. But that's a really hard festival to get into, so congratulations on that. I love covering that festival, and it just really, really good film. So that really says a lot about your film and the fact of how much you were in it and had to carry it, what it said to their programmers. So kind of put that on your award shelf too, just even being selected.
Thank you.
And are you going to be, with the theatrical release coming up and the Netflix, just one last question. Do you have anything kind of like a Netflix party or you're going to go down to Walmart with your friends and check out you on a shelf?
My family and me will probably go by the movie and, you know, the first Beach Film Festival that we did, I had some friends come out and we saw the movie, and now I think my family and me will go by the movie, and it'll be really cool to see the DVD and the cover, but I don't think, you know, I wasn't planning on having a party or anything.
Oh, yeah, no, I just asked because I remember the first time I had my first film I ever produced. It was a national release. And this is probably as arrogant as I get. I went around to 5 different Hollywood videos and saw it on the shelf, and I just thought, oh, this is so trippy that I can go to different video stores. And I don't know what was better, that it was on the shelf or that it wasn't on the shelf. So it was kind of like, hey, wait a minute, if I'm seeing it, nobody rented it. So, but yeah, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on everything, and best wishes to the theatrical run and the release. And I have really enjoyed talking to you today. And in the future, just through your representation, just let me know if you'd like to come back on or you have the next film you get. We want our guests to know that this is a place they can come back and plug their next work or talk about their next work. We kind of want to just create a big family and not have it be like, okay, you are on, see ya. So be sure to let us and your representation know that that's open to you.
Thank you. It was really nice talking to you, and thank you for having me.
Oh, yes. Thank you, and you have a wonderful day. Thank you. That was McKenna Ballard, who was joining us to talk about A Little Game, and we really appreciate her time. She's obviously a fantastic talent and gave us some great gems of information there. I'm going to wrap this up with, we have our guest planned. This was episode number 4. We have our guest planned for episode number 5, which will be on November 26th at 3:30 p.m. L.A. time, the usual time. It's going to be Connie Flores. She's from Hawaii, and she's going to be talking to us about a Hawaii film, a documentary that played the Hawaii Spring International Film Festival, has played festivals in San Francisco and all over the country. And I'm going to just keep you guys in suspense and make sure that you tune in next week. Again, next week, 11/26, 3:30 p.m. I know it's the day before Thanksgiving, but make that effort to tune in, or remember and tell your friends that these shows are archived. So they're here for you to enjoy, and we hope you enjoyed episode 4. And if this was your first time listening, please check out the site www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/Paul Booth Movies, and there you'll be able to find the other episodes. With that, I say good night and aloha, and thank you for joining us, and I will see you next time. Well, you'll hear me next time. Take care.